The 19th chapter of the Gospel of John, beginning with verse 31. We'll read four verses. Sister Gail.
The Jews, therefore, because it was the preparation that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath day, for that Sabbath day was an high day, besought Pilate that their legs might be broken, and that they might be taken away. Then came the soldiers, and brake the legs of the first, and of the other which was crucified with him. But when they came to Jesus, and saw that he was dead already, they brake not his legs. But one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith came there out blood and water.
Verse 31, it says, the Jews therefore, because it was the preparation that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath day, etc. Now, what's the preparation? Preparation for what?
For the Passover.
All right, preparation for the Passover. What day would be the day of the preparation?
14th.
And therefore, the 15th is?
The high day.
The 15th is the Passover. The 15th is the feast of the Passover. The slaying of the lamb did not take place on the feast of the Passover, neither in the type nor in the antitype. In the type, the lamb was to be slain
between
two evenings, which is
12:00 and 3.
And 6. And the midpoint would be 3 p.m. So it's a Passover lamb was slain 3 p.m. but was eaten
on the 15th day.
On the next day, which started that evening at 6 o'clock, Jewish time. In other words, 3 p.m. is 3 hours before sundown, which is the beginning of the next day. The next day is the 15th. And the slaying of the lamb, therefore, was on the day of preparation. In fact, the lamb is being prepared to be eaten. It's slain, it's slain, it's flayed, with the skin taken off, and prepared for the roasting. Yes?
You mean that will happen at the same, it happened that night.
It happened that night that they cooked it, that they cooked and ate it. But the preparation was done formally at 3 p.m. And the first act was the slaying. That was done at 3. Now, it says next that that Sabbath day was an high day. All right, let's dissect this because it says that Sabbath day. What Sabbath day are they referring to?
The calendar Saturday.
All right. The Sabbath day is a Saturday. That's the Jewish Sabbath day. But when does the Jewish Saturday begin?
Friday
at 6 o'clock, at 6 p.m. And it expires
Saturday.
Saturday, 6 p.m. So from a practical standpoint, being people are asleep, you know, at 6 p.m., a few hours, you get tucked in, go to sleep, and the bulk of the day is the daylight hours of the succeeding morrow. But it's still the same calendar day. Now it's saying that Sabbath day But that Sabbath day began, would not be like our Saturday. Our Saturday is from midnight to midnight, instead of from 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. the next day. And it's saying then that Jesus was slain on the Jewish Sabbath, which began Friday evening at 6 p.m. and ended Saturday evening, 6 p.m. But we cannot fractionalize that day because that is the one day. The Jewish day is from 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. We say Friday and Saturday to try to adjust it for our minds. We do that because we have a different calendar. So then, from Friday p.m. to Saturday p.m., from our Friday p.m. to Saturday p.m., is there one day. It's not two different days. It's not a Friday and a Saturday. And so we find that Jesus actually, according to our calendar, was slain on what we would call on Friday. What we would call on the Friday. In other words, it starts at midnight, according to our calendar. Our calendar. Now, it says that Sabbath day was an high day. Well, why is that put there?
Weren't there certain restrictions on Sabbath anyway, but on certain special Sabbath days, there were even more restrictions against any kind of doing your work and so on?
Well, I think in the, on the Passover, first day is a high day, and the seventh day is a high day. And so the first day of the Sabbath, the first day of the Passover happened to be a Saturday. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm trying to say is this. That all high days in the Jewish festivals are Sabbath. They're not seven. They can be a seventh day if they happen to fall on the seventh day. So it says that high day, which is a festival Sabbath, not a seven-day Sabbath. See, and usually when we think of a Sabbath, we think of the seven. Well, that's true because there are 52 sevens in the year, 52 of them. So. And how many high day Sabbaths? Well, there's only three. I'm just off the top of my head. Three out of 52, so you don't normally think of a high day being a Sabbath, and it's a special Sabbath. It's saying that the high day Sabbath, we're reading. The Jews, therefore, because it was the preparation that the body should not remain upon the cross on the Sabbath day, for that Sabbath day was an high day. Now, this is from the Jewish standpoint, right? They're the ones that are objecting here in the text. They're saying they don't want that body on the cross because it'll defile our Sabbath. They want it taken down. It's 3 p.m. now. He's on the cross, 3 p.m. They want that body taken down and put away and not up exhibit while they're having their Passover, while they're observing the Passover. And so they're saying that Passover, that's the feast of Passover, that happened to fall on a Saturday. Yeah, that's what Chai said, but I was thinking of the crucifixion. That's why we differed there. Actually, that Sabbath day, in other words, the Jews' feast of Passover, in which they ate the lamb at the time that Jesus died, was on a Saturday. The holiday was the Sabbath, and the Sabbath day was the Sabbath. They both coincided. Another way of explaining it this way, December 25th is a holiday. It's called Christmas. It's like a special day in the Christian calendar, December 25th. But that can fall on any day of the week. That can fall on the 25th can be a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It can be any day of the week. It's saying that the feast of the Passover of the Jews, that day, fell on a Saturday, fell on the normal Sabbath day that the high Sabbath fell also coincide, which meant then that Jesus died before that day began, before Saturday. He died Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. Saturday, 3 hours later, was the Jewish calendar day began. So that from these two facts, that Jesus died 3 hours before a certain Saturday, back in the Jewish calendar when their feast began, we can then see what day he actually died. We know then he died on a Friday, on the sixth day, not the seventh day, and that that happened to be, by various astronomers, to be proven as April 3rd, A.D. 33, Friday. He died Friday, April 3rd, A.D. 33. Now, of course, maybe that doesn't still get across because it's mathematical. You have to demonstrate it more on a board. So we know then he died before the Passover. And you'll notice that the Jews, when they have their Passover, they don't reckon the 14th. They start at the 15th. They start, when you look on the Jewish calendar, it's think of the 15th day of Nisan is the Passover. But we as Christians attach far more importance, not to that, but to the day before. And that's why brethren, too, you know, they try to observe this in the Jewish way as far as possible. And it's the day before that feast, the day of preparation, that we really honor more. Yes?
The thing is, though, the day before and the day of come on the same literal day that we have on our calendar. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, what we do in order to make sure we have the right date, we go the previous evening according to, in order to have it in the evening, we backtrack. So we look at a Jewish calendar. If you want to know when our memorial service is, generally speaking, all you have to do is look at a Jewish calendar when they say Passover, and you reckon the previous evening. Because Jesus, the night before in which he was crucified, the night before, he observed the memorial with his disciples. So we go back one day. So it's very easy. You don't have to calculate it. Brother Russell used this method, and I think it's the wisest in that we don't have to have conflicting mathematicians. We just take the Jewish calendar and go back the night before. And that's like...
Except some of their Passovers have not come. That they've been like a week away from ours.
Oh yeah, well we do that in order to have some sort of uniformity. And I think, well, the fact that we only have it once a year, we're trying to have it annual instead of like a mass. So frequently, we try to have it annually. At the time Jesus died, it was just before the Jewish Passover back there, so we take the Jewish Passover now and backtrack one the night before to have our memorial. But technically speaking, the Jewish calendar is erroneous at times. Sometimes we're a day late, sometimes we're a month late. I mean, depending on the way they figure. But it's well to do it this other way, and there's no bickering, just to take the standard Jewish calendar as a guide. Now, another important thing here, though, is there are many brethren who are scholars. And in the fundamentalist movement, who think Jesus died on a Wednesday. That's what they had, that he was 3 full days in the tomb. And they have to fit the account for that 3 days, they have to take a Wednesday, that he died on a Wednesday. But it's impossible for him to die because it says here that in order for him to be taken down, they had urgent orders to get him off that cross before polluting it, and therefore it was the day before the Passover, not 2 days before, nor 3 days before. Therefore, this is a good text to show that Jesus was crucified on a Friday, the day before their Sabbath, which was Saturday.
But their Sabbath began on Friday after 6, right?
Yeah.
So that just seemingly after 2 days, according to our
Well, we mix it up with ours. It's really, I should have kept it separate. Their Saturday begins with sundown.
Friday.
No, not the feast. The feast of Passover is from sundown to sundown, is the 15th of Nisan. From sundown to sundown, and which is the Saturday, it says here, was their 7th day. So the 7th day was the 15th of Nisan, was their Sabbath day. It's the 3 hours before that that Jesus died on the cross.
I still don't get what you're talking about.
Well, Brother Frank, are they saying that because he was cut off in the midst of the week? And they were given Wednesday for that?
No.
But that would be, it might be another thing they throw in, but that midst of the week is midst of 7 years. It's 3.5 years with no special calendar day mentioned.
And Jesus died on the 14th, right? At 3 o'clock.
That's right.
At 6 o'clock, they began. Day, right?
Yes.
So when do they have their feast? You mean they don't eat anything that night from 6 to...
Yes,
that's what I'm saying. So.
Well, it's the difficulty is there are two perspectives in viewing it, from our calendar, from the Jewish calendar, and when you're mentioning things, I'm not sure which perspective you're taking. So I can misunderstand you, you can misunderstand me. But actually, that calendar day of the Feast of Passover, the 15th of Nisan, was the Jewish Sabbath day. It began at the same time. The Jewish High Day, the Jewish Sabbath, began that same evening,
like
3 hours after Jesus' crucifixion.
That was equivalent to the Friday, same Friday that Jesus was...
Well, no, don't worry. I'm just sticking now to the Jewish.
I understand, but you see, many of us can't think of how the two come in together. It has to be.
Well, I was thinking of the memorial and all, and I was really mixing the picture because I was thinking in connection with the memorial. But actually, with regard to the Sabbath day of this text in John, what's this? John 19, chapter verse 31, where it says that Sabbath day and the high day were both coincidental. They both occurred at the same time. And they both began in the evening, 6 p.m. And that's 3 hours after the crucifixion. So their Sabbath day. But we have to go, Jesus died the day before. He died 3 hours before the 6 p.m. So he died in the preceding Jewish calendar day.
It would seem like a day before,
yeah.
But it was actually.
But we
use
the term Friday because we don't keep the Jewish calendar. So we say Friday, that he died Friday 3 p.m. A.D. April 3rd, A.D. 33. But if you express that Jewish way, it's completely different, and we'd be out of the ballpark because we'd have to get the Jewish calendar and be thinking of it from the Old Testament standpoint, which was the beginning of the month of Abib, or which is later called Nisan. And the first day of Nisan doesn't correspond with our calendar at all. So it's a completely different thing. And he died on the 14th of Nisan. And the 14th of Nisan, he died April 3rd, according to our calendar. But according to the Jewish calendar, he died the 14th of their calendar. So it's so different that we have to think of it from our standpoint. And our standpoint is that it was Friday. And in any event, the Wednesday does not fit here at all. You cannot squeeze the Wednesday. And this is the view of many, many brethren. I'm talking about in the truth, too, not just in the fundamental. But who splits hairs like that anyway? Very few. Except when it comes to memorial, that want to observe that together in unity as far as possible.
But the thing that really does help is that Jesus did eat the Passover on the 14th day.
That's right.
Because actually, but it was...
It was more important for Jesus to die exactly as the Jewish calendar indicated in the law than his eating of it. He is the fulfillment of the type. So that's the important point, that he died on the 14th of Nisan between the two evenings, 3 p.m. So this helps to rule out the Wednesday day without going into all the other scriptures about the third day and so forth, which also prove the same thing, but you have to deal with each separately. Verse 32, then came the soldiers and brake the legs of the first and of the other, which was crucified with him. Anyone wish to explain that? You'd be able to assist the Gail on that one.
There is that thought that there already were two crucified at the time that Jesus brought his cross, and then two more were crucified with him at the same time. Is that what you're referring to? There were five here, Jesus being in the middle, and they were going right down the row. They came to the first and broke the legs, then they came to the one that was next to Jesus, which was one of the ones crucified with him, and then they got to Jesus, who was in the middle.
In other words, when Jesus was led away to be crucified, there were two others with him at that time. But in the meantime, there were also some already crucified that the Bible account does not deal with specially. But when we analyze the Gospels, there has to be somebody else there. Because in analyzing them, we find that certain ones say certain things and all, and we have to clarify it. Now that we have to consider now. Now we know that there were two others crucified with him in connection with that day that he was crucified. There were two others. Now incidentally, when people are crucified, they could be on that cross for days. So it doesn't say how long the others were on the cross that were before him. But on the day that Jesus was crucified, there were two others that were with him and were beside him in with the cross. The cross in the middle and the two. But there were also two others.
Okay, yeah. So is that two others spoken of in 32? I don't get
it. Well, we're going to come to that. Sister Gail mentioned it, but...
I just didn't see it.
Well, what is happening? Let's consider here five people on one side, but the centerpiece would be the cross. There'd be two on each side. Now, the two on each side, the end ones, were not necessarily all in parallel line, but closely resembling it, maybe set back a little. By considering the counts, it seems to suggest that there were these crosses up there, and then they put the three that were crucified that day in front of the others, but not smack in front of it, but just in the center, centralized them, because Jesus was to be specially pointed out as being crucified between the two thieves. Now, notice, in the account when we read it, they talked on the cross, right? And one was favorable to Jesus, Lord, remember me when you come into thy kingdom, and so forth. And the Lord, how he says, I tell thee today that thou shalt be. I tell thee today that thou shalt be with me in paradise. But the statement of Jesus merely saying that I'm telling you today when things look so bleak. As me being king with a kingdom. Nevertheless, I'm telling you today, under these circumstances, that in my kingdom you'll be there. But he's not saying that when Jesus died, he immediately went to heaven. That he died and then went up. Like the immortal soul, you know, went to heaven. And that the thief, when he died, he went to heaven. That's not what we say. So we punctuate that scripture. I say unto thee today, comma, that thou shalt be with me in paradise. In other words, we break it up and not read it, that you're today going to be in paradise, because even Jesus wasn't in paradise that day. Now, when they came to be crucified, they would approach the hill. They climb up the hill. And they're approaching the cross. And they notice that they break the legs of two before they arrive at Jesus in the center. And so in the Companion Bible, the author there, or not the author, the compiler, in the footnote somewhere, in the back appendix, suggests that there are places in history, like he mentions a place in France, some little village, where they have five crosses, with Jesus in the beginning, the main cross in the beginning, in the middle, and suggests that that's like hundreds of years ago that this was done, suggesting that there is a basis for that, and he uses this John account as among other reasons, to illustrate that. So, in another account, when we read the Gospel of the Crucifixion, both thieves, or malefactors, are cursing Jesus, speaking bad words about him. So, it wouldn't be the one who said, we at least deserved what we got, this man, he's innocent. He doesn't deserve what he's gotten. At least we're getting our due deserts. It's that man who turned to Jesus and said, Lord, remember me when you come in thy kingdom. That isn't compatible with the other gospel, which says both of them cursed him. And both of them found fault with him. These are the other two that are on the same hill that are crucified. They're cursing him and so forth and all, but not. So one account mentions malefactors, and the other mentions thieves or robbers. A different term, a different Greek word is used in describing these two pairs, suggesting that they were crucified on a different basis. So the two that had this discussion with Lord, remember me in the kingdom and all, they're the two that are next to Jesus, close to him, so that he can turn and talk to Jesus and say, remember me when you come in the kingdom. And the other accounts refer to what the others said on the cross. In other words, and the net result is three of those on the cross had nothing complimentary to say about Jesus, only one. Where the other Gospels just don't distinguish the number. They say they include all of them. All of them found fault. But it's only speaking of a certain, the pair that are, one pair here, in this account, is close to Jesus on his immediate right and left, and the others are a little bit more separated, a little more distant from him.
It says in Matthew 27, it says that likewise, also the chief priest mocking him with the scribes and elders said, he saved others, himself he cannot save. If he be king of Israel, let him now come down from the cross and we will believe him. He trusted in God, let him deliver him now if he will have him. For he said, I am the Son of God. The thieves also, which were crucified with him, cast the same in his teeth.
See? So the accounts are not different. The account is talking about these two that are designated, at least in the King James, as thieves in this case, that they both found fault with him. But not in this John account is straightening it out. The John account is considers that maybe this isn't compatible. That he's trying to explain that the two that were immediate to Jesus, they are a different pair than these others that were there before they arrived at Golgotha. And the 33rd verse says, but when they came to Jesus, so they started at one end when they climbed up the hill and broke the legs of the first, and then the next, but it says, and the other is the one that's more immediate to Jesus on one side. And then they come to Jesus and they go to break his legs, but they're already broken. I mean, he's already dead, pardon me. And it says that the soldier, one of them, had a spear in his hand and pierced his side. Then they would go to the next two and break their legs. But it doesn't bother to go to the next two. It just comes, the important point when they came to Jesus that he was already dead, in order to fulfill the scripture that not a bone of his body was broken, in order for him to be the antitype of the Passover lamb.
Brother Frank.
Yes.
In 32, the way it reads here in the King James, it says that then came the soldiers and brake the legs of the first, and of the other which was crucified with him. So the first then, it kind of would indicate that the first is already there.
Yeah, that's and right.
And then the other one that was crucified with Jesus was one of the ones that was crucified with Jesus,
yeah,
and
right.
So forth.
That's right. That's exactly it. We had to go through all this other first to sort of prepare the way, because this is a new thinking. It's in the Companion Bible, but it's like a new from the normal conceptual understanding of the crucifixion. Yes?
What does that do? Lead to death or something?
What
breaking of the legs.
Oh, a shock would kill one immediately. Now, the Jewish writers and their scientists have tried to say that doesn't do it, that it does not commit that. Well, that's a complete fallacy. Yes, go on.
Also, you need to lift yourself up with your legs to get a breath. I think you mentioned that before. Because of the way you were hanging, you couldn't breathe if your arms were stretched out.
There are a lot. Now, it's interesting that the Jewish doctors are trying to say this is all like a figment of the imagination. And they try to say, well, then he didn't die, he was doped or something. One writer has the Passover plot that he took a strong drug to simulate death so that then when he would be buried that his disciples could steal his body away. But then the scripture nullifies it, tells them he did die and that there was the tomb in which nobody had been laid before and a stone was rolled in front and it was sealed.
And God
said. Yeah, and God said that. So this is almost like an anticipation that some would try to discredit. And it was cut, hewn out of solid rock, so there's no back door for them to sneak out another way. So when the front of the tomb is sealed, that effectually closes the whole interior. It's only one entrance and exit. Now, one of the soldiers with a spear pierced his side, and forthwith came out blood and water. What's that? Any comments on that? Yes?
I heard that the water was probably from fluid that fell in his lungs from hanging like that. Whenever he pierced his side, his lungs were full of fluid. Naturally, the blood.
Yes, the pericardium or something, there's like a sac outside the heart, and that the bleeding heart went into that sac with water, and when the spear came in, it punctured that, and the blood and the water came out of his side, and it suggests that he died of a broken heart in that situation. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? But he was in such weakened condition from that emotional trauma that even though he cried out like with a sense of victory, it is finished, with a loud cry, that the energy taken to make that pronouncement, it is finished, with a loud cry of victory, would expend with the heart just couldn't take it. More. It had already been next to the bursting point. Just from his, and just before that, he said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And God, for a moment, as it were, turned his face back toward Jesus. And he felt that. It had a felt shock. Weakened his heart so that when he did the other, his heart burst, filling that cavity, and they come along later to pierce his side at a later time. And also, it has another reason here. What was that? Well, that's in the serum and the clot. That's another factor that's in the veins and all that. This is just where the spear went in. Yes?
When you said there's another reason, referring to verse 37, says another scripture says they shall look on him whom they pierced, which is further fulfillment of that later on, yet future. But they had to see him pierced.
That would be in fulfillment of, it's the Isaiah 53:1, or Zechariah. That's Zechariah. That's Zechariah. 22nd Psalm is not quite as pertinent on that particular point. Then there's these hymns we sing. By water and the blood. I don't know, it's a chorus or something. And we say the water of truth. And it has to be through Jesus, that truth. I mean, it is a miracle to understand the measure of truth that we have. It's miraculous whether we appreciate it or not. Because the God of this world has blinded the minds of men. And it's through Jesus. So from his side. And the blood, of course, then represents his death. That the need that both are necessary to the Christian. Benefit from that sacrifice. We just have time for verse 35. Let's read 35 and 6.
And he that saweth bear record, and his record is true, and he knoweth that he saith true, that ye might believe. For these things were done, that scripture might be fulfilled. A bone of him shall not be broken.
And one more verse, because we covered that.
Again, another scripture saith, they shall look on him whom they pierced.
All right. On that verse 35, who was that applied to? All right. Yeah. Instead of mentioning his name.
Saying I.
Yeah.
And I story.
Yeah. And this bearing record, all, if you go to his epistle, where it begins, he talks to a nobleman, evidently who might have sponsored him with regard to finances in order to get the Gospels printed, for all we know, or copied in a better form, more enduring form. Oh, I testify to thee, O most noble Theophilus, or something like that. And he mentions that man twice in his writings, John, suggesting to me that that man was not only interested in the truth, but somehow sponsored John, backed him up. And so he, as an introduction, because in recognition of that, he gives him a token recognition and then gets into the message proper. And he uses this word about bear record. In the book of Revelation, in also in his epistle, and what about the gospel here? Let's see what that says. No, it doesn't here in the gospel, but in the others. And a bone of him shall not be broken, and that shows that that even when they put the nails through, there's a way of doing it. We believe it was in here rather than in here. That was just below. And that in Scripture, there's no designation for the word wrist or ankle. There's no definition. An ankle is a part of the foot. A wrist is a part of the hand. So when it mentions the piercing, you have to analyze as to just where that puncture took place, and it had to take place where no bone would be broken, which is very possible here because it's held by tendons. We have bones here and all, but they're all strung with these wires like, or tendons as well, and on the tendons or sinews you have tendons, sinews, flesh, but they're all correlated.
Right.
And this is in between.
In here,
yeah.
There's a space there.
That's
anyway.
Right.
There's not just between the tenons and
yeah.
all. There is no bone in between.
And then, again, another scripture that says they shall look on him whom they have pierced, and that's in Zechariah. That scripture also in Revelation, the beginning of Revelation.
Yeah, 1:7.
Yeah. That's that has to do with a future application, where this in John has to do with the past application, where he says, I was there and I saw it. This is interesting too with John, that John tarried at the cross. Because notice when these soldiers came, they didn't come at 3:00. And John was there before Jesus died, when Jesus said to him, Son, behold thy mother, mother, behold thy son. And all that conversation took place before his death. And then between the 3 p.m. and 6 p.m., Joseph of Arimathea went to Pilate and besought that he could have that body. And he came back with Nicodemus and took the body down from the cross. But before that was done, these soldiers had come and broken the legs of the others to hasten their death, and then it came to Jesus, and the spear was inflicted in his side. So John stayed there sometime after Jesus' death. Not just when he died, then went away, but stayed there. That's interesting. That, and that these other two... Now we can see why John felt it essential to bring Nicodemus in this picture. He brings Joseph of Arimathea, but the other Gospels honor Joseph, but not John, only John. They left out about Nicodemus. We haven't come to that. That's a little. Doesn't say. Does it say here?
No.
Yeah. Then came also Nicodemus, and it was Nicodemus who had that private conversation with Jesus, and only John speaks of that conversation. So we're thankful to that account, the Gospel of John, in including certain details that help round out the Gospel. That's why you have four Gospels instead of one. They all each cast light on the other and gives a rounded out perspective of what actually occurred. So then we'll close this.